Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'm
from. Take it, Maggie!
Oh, get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park
Avenue. All right, here we go. The chores.
The chores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You're my wife. Free Farm Friday, we're in year number, we're coming up on ending year number two now. We're about, 20 months into this endeavor that began in February of 2021, talking about the sham scamdemic. That's what brought the whole thing about, and about how everyone's going, look, you're still trying to lock you down, you might as well take advantage of it. Learn how to farm. Learn how to homestead. There's an interesting story at LifeSiteNews.com here today. Homesteading as a response to our world's crisis. A report from a conference, and he's writing about a team of LifeSite reporters, John Paul Gruchka, Michael Hogan, and I went this weekend to a conference of Homesteaders America in Front Royal, Virginia. Now, what is the distinction of where and what is in Front Royal, Virginia? Christendom College is what's in Front Royal, Virginia. Joel Salatin is nearby. Ladies and gentlemen, New Christendom ain't waiting. It's building. It's begun. It's out there. And Mitter Monday and I and Candace, we met Michael Thomas, the organizer of the, what was the name of the homesteading, the Catholic Land Movement event in Sally Manor? I want to say New Tenochtitlan, where, and he said 240 some odd people showed up. You know, we just started sending invites out. We got on every social media platform we could and invited people to come to our farm, and bam-o, 240 some odd men, women, and children showed up for this two-day event. And they talked about the restoration of the Catholic land movement, which is, you know, in my talk that I gave to St. Benedict's Center that you can get at my Substack free of charge, don't cost nothing. You know, Mitter Monday, are you going to run Mitter Monday's mic, or is he going to run it? And are you going to run, is Brian on?
Brian is on.
Well, let's see if we wired the phone up correctly, because you and I wired it, so we're about to find out. Mitter Coke. He is not there. We got a problem.
Mitter Church.
Oh, were you Barrett? Were you on mute?
I will not say yes or no.
He was muted. You Barretted yourself.
Yes, but I'm here.
Hey, welcome, brother.
Welcome. Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello, Mitter Monday.
Hello, Mitter Coke. How are you, sir, today?
Pretty good, considering everything.
But. Can you believe that, okay, you're going to have to mute when I'm, just mute. There you go. Can you believe that here at Studio St. Michael, the first guest in our little studio here, and in Madison's former room, is the old farmer on a Free Farm Friday, and then the first guest on the phone is the new farmer on a Free Farm Friday. This is one for the record books, brother, sister, Brista.
Pretty amazing.
Oh, we're very proud to be here.
Just excited that that everything is still progressing and we're still doing it. So.
Well, I want you to listen to Mute. There you go. I'm training him. Look, Simeon's can operate mixing boards. It's not hard. You, by the time you leave here today, you'll be a, we'll have you up to like 9 hours an hour, Monday. Don't you worry. I didn't get to the punchline of the event at Front Royal, though. So they went to the Conference of Homesteaders of America in Front Royal, Virginia, with some 5,000 attendees. Brian, 5,000 attendees. There's something that's really, really happening out there, brother.
Yes, there is. And it's not, you know, it's kind of everywhere. You know, I go to meetings and people are talking about it at soil and water conservation district meetings. They're talking about it at watershed meetings. They're talking, you know, it's not just Catholics either. It's everybody. They're starting to wake up. And
hang on, Brian. I'm troubleshooting an audio issue. Stand by.
Green Acres is the place to be. Fun living is the life for me.
All right, we'll be back.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, yeah, loud and clear.
Okay.
It wasn't you. It was the there is a bug in the software that we use. I've been telling Justin I need to write to the software author because this ain't the first time that this happens, and it just goes. It just drops the line in feed for no reason whatsoever, and that's what it just did. So it's a 20-second fix. It's not hard to fix. It's just knowing about it. And, of course, I imagine that there were howls of pain in the Crusader Stadium chat room. Is it just me? Am I the only one that lost the audio? Something like that.
It's okay. I reassured everybody that I was saying really smart things.
He was saying really smart things. So let's go back to this. 5,000 people show up at Front Royal, Virginia, for a conference on homesteading. And LifeSite News has the sub-headline, Brian, Self-Sufficiency as a Protection Against Enslavement.
I mean, I don't think that there's a better definition or title. I mean you look at, if you're dependent on, you know, the grocery store, you know, that you really don't have any other options, especially we get locked in a small town where the big chain has come in and killed everything else, and that's all you have, and nobody's bold enough to go take it on their own to start growing or do anything else. So you kind of get, you're a slave to that. So it makes total sense.
Yeah. And then they write about this guy named John Lovell. And they say there was no doubt in the minds of many of the speakers at this year's Homesteader Conference they were heading into difficult times. The writing is on the wall, Lovell, a veteran and former member of Special Operations, told his 500 listeners. He reminded us of the pandemic, food shortages, gasoline price hikes, and the lack of trust in politicians. And yes, he also informed the audience that Bill Gates owns more farmland than anyone else, and that there are many food processing plants burning mysteriously in our country. This is a subject that you and I, Mitter Monday, and we've tracked this on the Crusade Channel. We talked about it. Janet Huxley has done news stories on it. It's almost as though there's a controlled effort to damage the food supply, BK.
Yes, and with the recent uptick in, I guess you'd call them natural disasters, with these droughts and hurricanes and earthquakes and everything else, it's just, it's complicating it. You know, the Mississippi River, I saw a deal where they it's so low they can't run the barges, and there's piles of soybeans sitting at elevators waiting to be put on a barge.
And the Mississippi River, she's going right. Well, you know, just to that point, when I drove to Thomas the Bald's wedding, hey, Thomas, hey, Rusty, when I drove to Thomas the Bald's wedding, we crossed over the Atchafalaya Basin Spillway. Dude, I've never seen the floor of the Atchafalaya Basin Spillway. I saw it. You don't ever see the floor of Lake Bijou or Henderson Swamp. Henderson Swamp is a swamp. It's supposed to have water in it. There was no water in it. So the drought, it continues. I was asking Maggie earlier. I'm like, when's the last time you think it rained here? I don't know what it's like in Texas right now, Brian, but it hasn't rained here in almost 3 weeks now.
Yeah, that's about where we're at. We had a wet August and a pretty wet September, but since then it's turned off, and you can drive our mini Colorado River here. It's the lowest I've ever seen it. That's even including 2011, which was a big major drought. So it's, it's getting pretty bad. You know, we drove to Tyler last week, and most of the way there was, it looked like they hadn't had rain in months. And, there, if you look at the drought monitor and stuff, some of that area we drove through was an extreme drought, the highest, rating on the drought. So we're a long way out of the woods.
Can we say, Brian, then, that the our special guest, one of our master farmers, Brian Koch, from Wharton, Texas, and Mitter Monday in the studio. Can we then safely say, then, that the results, the ravages of the early drought this year, even though the rain did come back, it was not nearly enough to undo the shortage of water that needed to be stored up?
Oh, no. Our profiles in the soil moisture are just horrible. And, it was good to grow grass, and people were able to cut hay and do a lot of things to get ready for the winter, but it needs to keep raining. It can't stop. August, September, wetter months for us, but then October and November are not. They historically, we average less. And, looking at, local rain gauges and stuff, we're still 20 inches behind for the year, probably even more for the water year, the water year just started over October 1st. So, that goes back, but I think they gauge it by January 1st on these gauges I'm looking at. So still we're 20 to 25 inches behind. And, we missed a lot in the spring, and what we got in August, it reminded me of a spring type flush. So you had, lots of grasses and stuff that normally when they get rain that time of year don't respond, and they did respond to the rain. And fortunately, people were able to take advantage of it and stuff. But no, like I said, it's got to keep raining, and we've got to keep the rivers, water in the rivers, because, we've got a bunch of towns along Interstate 35 that rely on that hill country, drainage for their lakes. Austin, San Antonio depends on the Edwards Aquifer plus a few other things. And if they're not filling back up, it's not sustainable. So
now let me just jump in here quickly, Brian. This can be undone. This too shall pass, as they say. I remember when the last family vacation that we had as an actual family with all the kids in tow was back in 2013. 2013, and we went to Lake Hartwell, and we were excited to go because we had crossed over Lake Hartwell so many dozens of times, and driving to Rock Hill, South Carolina, where my sister and brother-in-law and my nieces and nephews live, where we used to go every summer. We decided this summer that we rented a cabin on Lake Hartwell. You probably know where I'm going with this because you probably remember this. When we got to Lake Hartwell and our lake house, there was no lake. It was dry. They were 22 feet down. 22 feet. Well, I've driven over Lake Hartwell since then, and I can tell you that it's back to where it should be. So this too shall pass. I don't know how many years it took. And, you know, Lake Hartwell is a reservoir, I believe, that services Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah. Well, you know, looking at the way those lakes are designed and stuff, you can get, you know, a period of a few weeks or a month or so of good wet weather, and you'll fill them up. I think you know, the issue that we're seeing, though, is our degraded landscapes are not infiltrating the water where it can be released at a, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? A average rate, if you will. Okay. So the water is not returning to the water tables and filling up the aquifers, which, you know, springs and stuff that keep the rivers flowing. They're not doing it. So everything is, the land's compacted or covered with concrete or it's, you know, whatever else, and it's all running off. So when you get a rain event, it all runs off to the Gulf or to the Atlantic or to the Pacific or wherever, and it's not being stored in the soil and in the aquifers like it should be. So it's telling me our water cycle is broken. And I think we've talked about, that's what started our discussion on the solution is, you know, building our soils back to help, you know, aid with that. But, you know, you have, when you have, you know, massive amounts of water and everything being run out into the ocean, it's not being saved on the land. And, you know, we get these problems and stuff, and we have to depend on reservoirs. We have to depend on stuff.
And Brian, you know what the great irony of all this is? What's one of the things that the climate change freaks and liars and schemers and connivers and just outright haters of all life on Earth and of the human race, what's one of the things that they tell us why we have to fight climate change? Because what's going to rise?
The temperature.
The seas. Well, the seas.
The seas and the
rivers are going to rise and over, and they're going to flood over, and you're going to lose your land. That's not working out so well. That's not working out according to the plan, bub.
Well, they're telling us carbon is, you know, carbon in the atmosphere is the problem. No, carbon not being in the soil is the problem.
There you go.
And they totally ignore it. So yeah, go ahead.
Let me bring Mitter Mundy in here. Mitter Mundy, how do you view this cyclical, if it is a cyclical, shortage of water?
Well, I mean, only being able to personally having looked at it for the last 50 or so years, I can tell you that...
Only 50
years. Yeah, I can remember in the late 80s, 88, 87, in month of May, we topped 14 inches of rain both years. I probably still have photographs. Remember those old-fashioned things, photographs?
Turn it up.
The tractor
what
stuck
are these
out
photographs that yeah. you refer to, sir?
It was, you know, stuck out in the field, you know, with the belly of the tractor sitting on the ground. It was so wet. Then here comes along the early 90s, and I have a pond on the one property, and it actually used to have very healthy freshwater mussel beds on them, which are, you know, are an indicator of good water health, and they're used for water testing because they absorb a lot of, you know, impurities and heavy metals and things to test the quality of that particular aquifer. And it got so bad. I mean, that pond was at the time maybe 12, 14 feet deep. You could walk 6-8 feet out into the pond. I mean, this is a giant, you know. And, you know, I went down there a couple weeks later, and there's shells all over the place because the raccoons went in and ate all the freshwater mussels and decimated it. But I went, you know, I saw that 5-year cycle just from 87 through to, say, 93 or 94. So the cycles are there, and I think they've always been there. And we certainly exacerbate the problem with the way we handle the agriculture in certain areas. So we aren't doing ourselves any favor. But the suggestion that the cycle is going to go away is not realistic.
All right, unmute you. Unmute. Good. So what Dan is saying, what the old farmer is saying here, I believe is correct, and that is we have no expectation that the cycle is going to go away. So what should you do, Brian? You should learn to adapt to it.
That's right. And, you know, that's what we've
always
done.
You should expect that the cycle is going to come. Is this the cycle year? Is this the year that we get the drought? And take precautions as best you can to deal with them. Be prepared, right?
That's right. And, you know, that's why I talk about what I talk about. That's why I talk about regenerative. That's why I talk about building your soils and keeping them in a place where when that rain does come, you take advantage of every drop. You know, I really wish we could do it like an in-person rainfall simulator so people could actually see what happens in the comparison between the different management of soils and how it works and everything. You'd be surprised that ground that has been plowed and tilled and all this stuff, you know, you get a half inch of rain on it. And that's all the rain that's going to soak in. Everything else is going to run off. And we follow those principles and you know, build it up. And when it does rain or when you do water it, you're going to make it more effective and efficient. You know, that water cycle in that little space you're managing is fixed. And tied to it is your nutrient cycle where, you know, through the biology that's being brought back and everything, your nutrients that are there are available to the plants that you're depending on for food and fiber or whatever else you're growing.
Now let's hit another headline here on Free Farm Friday with our master farmers, Brian Koch and Dane Mundy, the old farmer, one on the phone and one in the air, or one on air. USDA now asking people to register their vegetable gardens for national database. Why does the USDA want you to add your local vegetable garden to a national database? Well, I can tell you can go pound sand. Ain't nothing in the Constitution says you can take a census of my freaking garden. So we know why they're doing this. We'll talk about it. In a move that has many folks scratching their heads, the United States Department of Agriculture has renewed its push for the People's Garden Initiative. You ever heard of this, Mr. Mundy?
No, I have never heard it referred to as that. There are coalitions of community gardens and stuff in some of the areas. I've heard that people starting to do that kind
fine.
Of thing.
That's fine. But, we don't have an issue with that. According to the USDA, the move is to foster a more diverse and resilient local food system to empower communities to address issues like nutrition access and climate change. So how am I going to address climate change? You want me to tell you how? What in the hell is going on here with this microphone? They're going to tell you, oh, you just generated too much methane. Your animals have generated too much CO2. Your carbon footprint is too big. And look, we're going to Dutch farmer your ass. That's where they're going with this. They're going to say, the Biden regime has passed an act, and he signed an executive order to cut all carbon emissions by one-third by 2023. And so to do that, we need to know what you people are growing. So the interesting thing about this to me is the amount of people that are going to say, oh, hey, okay, please come in and kill me, is
0.0.
And you know how I know that? Because you know where I'm finding this story at? It's been reposted about 15,000 times now. I'm finding it at the Ice Age Farmer site. I'm finding it at, this one is the Free Thought Project. I'm finding it at all the usual libertarian suspects and the survivalist guide guys site. You know, I just did a quant search. I don't use Google unless I can avoid it. I just did a QWA and Tia Quant search, and I got 1,200 results. And I'm looking at the websites of who it is that's ringing the alarm bell about this. So the news has already gone out. This is an October the 12th story. This is 2 days ago. To register your garden with the USDA, one must meet several easily obtainable standards. These standards essentially define every community garden in the country. Now, the government organization that shells out billions every year to companies whose products, like high fructose corn syrup, are responsible for a massive epidemic of obesity across the planet, will have a database of them. And they say, we welcome gardens. We welcome gardens nationwide to join us in the People's Garden effort. Anything that starts with people is communist. The PRC, the People's Republic of China, right? Anything that starts with peoples, don't just walk away, run away. The People's Garden effort and all it represents said, as Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, local gardens across the country share USDA's goals of building more diversified and resilient local food systems. Lies. This is a pack of frickin' lies. So, Brian, we know that we must be on the map. And now that we're on the map, and now that they know about us, they want us to be on the menu.
That's correct. And I think if you read the fine print on the People's Garden, it's talking about community gardens. It's not talking about your garden or my garden. It's talking about these community gardens. What that tells me is that your garden will have to be destroyed because it is not approved as a people's garden. You have to go to the community garden. You have to eat what they grow. Or if they don't have anything, you don't have anything. That's what it's telling me. I don't think they're targeting, well, I'm trying to craft my language carefully because
good luck with that.
I'm not saying we're not being targeted. I'm just saying the registration in us, and if we're not registered, we're not legit. Is that, I think that's in short,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of,
The Free Thought Project says, case in point, in December 2020, a scientific committee composed of 20 academics and doctors recommended cutting the limit for added sugars in the diet to 6% of daily calories from 10% in the current guidelines. The group compiled a massive trove of data and presented this request to the USDA, citing rising rates of obesity and the link between obesity and health problems like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. To be clear, you need absolutely 0.0% of your diet to be comprised of sugar. But this panel seemingly knew the USDA, who hands out billions of taxpayer dollars to companies who specialize in addicting Americans to sugar, would never get behind a recommendation against all sugar, so they offered a slight concession here. Mitter Mundy, that's a valid point. That they offered a slight concession because they can't give up on what they've begun with the ethanol and the high fructose corn syrup and all the people that they paid to grow these endless fields of monoculture corn.
Well, like everything else, I've told you, farming is very capital intensive. Nobody's going to want to give up what they've invested at this point. So, and I mean, if you can take a step back realistically and say, well, I can't necessarily blame them as far as that goes. Now, you know, they've been duped into it. They've been roped into it. What was the name of that movie back in the, I think it was the late 70s, early, had Sissy Spacek in it, and it was about the farmers going bankrupt, and suddenly she became an expert and was testifying before Congress on the rural farm issues at the time. But, you know, it was not an unrealistic movie, and they were talking about, you know, how the local ag people, agents were going out and say, we're going to plant fence row to fence row and take these loans and, you know, and buy more tractors and buy more. They pushed this in the 60s and the 70s. And you know, once that infrastructure is built, it's very difficult to dismantle, especially when you've got the whole bureaucracy wrapped around it. So I mean, we can only do this by ourselves and do our own community gardens, which maybe is precipitating this thought. It's like they know that that's one of their cracks in the armor that they got to seal up, because what are they going to do with us? I mean, I'll tell you, I get a every 5 years I get a request from the Department of Agriculture to fill out information about my farm, and technically they can fine me $100 if I don't do it. Well, I do not do it, and I have yet to be fined $100. But I will get phone calls. Have you filled out your ag survey yet? And it's like, no, I'm not going to. So they do that.
So I'm looking for this Sissy Spacek movie. You said in late 1970s?
Yeah.
Welcome to L.A., Coal Miner's Daughter, Heartbeat, Raggedy Man, Missing, The Man with Two Brains, The River, that may be it.
Yeah,
Marie, Violets Are Blue, whatever the film, I get the point. But listen to the conclusion from the story from the Free Thought Project. Well, I have about the USDA asking all of us to register our gardens. While a handful of folks inside the USDA may have well-meaning intentions behind this program, the behemoth organization's track record in history clearly indicate that the overwhelming majority of them do not care about your health. Not only do they not care about your health, but most of their farm and food budget goes toward subsidizing products that directly harm your health. So skepticism over a national garden database run by this organization is entirely warranted. As the world teeters on the verge of nuclear war and economic collapse, remember that in times of war and economic downturns, food, Brian Kay, is more valuable than gold.
Absolutely. I've never eaten gold.
Now
I'm drinking Goldschlager, though.
I was going to say, isn't there there's a liqueur that has some gold in it?
Yeah, Goldschlager. Mm-hmm.
Now listen to this. Founder of the guy that I was talking about earlier, John Lovell, is also the founder of the Warrior Poet Society. And Justin, you know this guy, John Lovell. And John Lovell, okay, so Daniel Rodriguez. Hey, Daniel. You know Daniel, Brian?
Yes.
Okay, so Daniel's doing these marches for the consecration of Texas to the Sacred Heart of our Lord, right? These rosary marches. He did one last week in San Antonio. Daniel sent me a gift for being a kind, gracious, humble host at the Congress that he attended, and it was a pin that doubles as a window breaker. You know, so if you get stuck in your car and your car, you know, flips off the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway and it's sinking in 10 feet of water or whatever, and you can't get the electric windows or them electric windows there, and it stops functioning, you can't get them down, you use this thing, it'll break the glass. So that's who Lovell is. Founder of the Warrior Poet Society, Lovell insisted in his speech that one not only needs to homestead, but also to protect one's farmstead. And for that, one needs training and planning. For him, it's clear that at a time of civil unrest or severe shortages, we are only 9 meals away from anarchy. That sounds like the infamous 3-day supply that every Walmart supposedly has, food supply for every Walmart supposedly has this 3-day supply. And then if there is no restock, then game's over. You got to provide for yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's important to be diverse in what you store, too, just so you're prepared. And then if you need to, you know, help take care of your community or whatever, you know, have that extra, too. And then figure out things because, as we know, it takes, you know, 50 days for some of your first vegetables to be ready. And, you know, having that other stuff on hand helps. You know, having chickens laying eggs helps. But you're going to have to think about them, too. Prep for, you know, feeding your animals. And looking at, you know, alternatives to, you know, going down to Tractor Supply or your feed store or wherever you're getting your feed and coming up with that. So,
now listen to this from the Life Site News story. Other speakers of the Homesteaders of America Conference, such as Joel Salatin, the owner of Polyface Farm in Virginia, and Sean and Beth Doherty from Ohio, show the audience how to start a homestead, and to get more details on that. The Dohertys, who are Catholic and raised and homeschooled 8 children on their homestead, gave 6 farm rules to their audience, which should help them start a farm. These are the 6 rules, Mitter Mundy. You can farm anywhere. Get rid of the picture of a model farm. All farm energy is solar energy. The farm must feed the farm. Capture your water. And 6, there is no such thing as waste.
Boy, I like that last one. That's my mantra all over. Correctorson, it was Jessica Lange. That movie was called Country. Wilfred Brimley and Sam Shepard. That was the movie. But Spacek also did testify for Congress and all. But that was those series of movies back in the mid 70s,
right,
late or mid 80s. That's a great list to live by. I mean, I think everybody, and I spoke about that at the Congress too, that has this idealized, you know, vision of what it's going to be like when you go out there and you're frolicking with your animals as you're picking lettuce out of the garden. And the reality is that just is not true. And there's going to be many, many, many things that you like and many, many things that you do not like. And like I did in my presentation, I hate manure. You know, by the time, you know, half the day's gone, you go into your 14th or 16th wheelbarrow. It's like, yeah, I've had enough of this crap, literally. You guys got to stop. Everybody's been so removed from it for so long, and you know, most of even parents going with their children, their recollection is going to Uncle Bobo's farm, you know, once in the summer every couple of years, and they don't have the connection.
Don't forget Aunt Petunia.
No.
Now let me get back to the LifeSite News story. Listen to this and see if this sounds familiar, all you crusaders out there. Maybe you've heard this before. Well, you have. Well, this sounds pretty a bit unrealistic and scary. John Lovell made it clear that we have had a period of wealth and technology that protected us and made us forget essential knowledge for survival, which you just said, in a not-so-safe environment. The security in our society, in his eyes, will quickly change. And then he said, we need forgotten critical knowledge. Don't be bullied anymore by globalists. Put trust in God, not in politicians. And finally, Brian Kay, my hope is in King, wait for it, King Jesus.
Is there anything else?
Well, no, but the point being, New Christendom has as its motto to live under the social kingship of Christ. My talk this past Saturday was the Catholic farm has the answers. And I think I demonstrated. I don't know, did you get to hear any of the talks?
Yes, I heard a couple of them.
Did you hear mine? You can say no.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
So you heard me make the point. And Brian, I'd never realized this before because I never, I don't read enough scripture, and I'm committed now to reading more. But when I started looking up, word searching at drbo.org, the term parable, in the New Testament, I kept coming up with the wonderful parables that our Lord used to teach, and it dawned on me, and I built it into the talk. Michael Thomas actually came up before he talked and told me, he goes like, dude, you literally took the words right off of my paper, of what I was going to say. It's clear, it's abundantly clear that because our Lord, the incarnate wisdom himself, taught in terms, he was talking to farmers. He taught and he used his metaphor and his allegory. He used life on the farm. You can't separate his kingship and you can't separate the living under his social kingship. You can't separate that from the farm. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have people that live in cities and in urban areas. That's not what that means. And it doesn't mean that they can't be good practicing Catholics. It doesn't mean that either. But it does mean that that element is there. And for guys like John Lovell to be saying that, and for thousands of people to be going to where Christendom colleges in Front Royal, Virginia, I think the revolution has already started, brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, 2020, I think, really flipped the switch. Everything that happened in 2020. And not just COVID, but the stolen election and everything else. And people were going to woke up and said, dang, I need to do something. And, you know, Joel Salatin, you know, I read his commentary in Stockman Grass Farmer magazine. And he was talking about how people were seeking him out. And he ran out of product. And regenerative farmers all over the nation were running out because people were seeking him out. And they had to increase their production and do, you know, do a lot of these things to keep up with the demand. I had a friend, he sells eggs in Houston at a farmer's market. He'll get there, you know, they'll open at 9 and he'll, you know, come home about 2 o'clock because, you know, they're done selling, and he'll bring back a few eggs. The first 2 or 3 weeks of the shamdemic, he sold out in 2 minutes, and I'm talking about 80 to 100 dozen eggs. He was buying eggs from me to take up there to keep up. Now, don't say that too loud because we're really not supposed to do that, but got to help a friend out. But that's what was going on. So people were seeking it out, and then on top of that, we're seeking out, okay, how do I do this myself? How do I, you know, manage a few chickens? How do I grow this? How do I do that? But the thing is, I've been saying this for a few years, since Hurricane Harvey, if not before that. It's like, you know, it's not a bad idea to pull out a little area in your backyard and grow something, you know, and grow something more than a tomato and a pepper and stuff, you know, grow some things that are going to mean something. And this was even before I was even really known about soil health and the importance of all that. It was just like, hey, it's a good idea to have that, because we always had that growing up. And it was nice because you could go and find a heck of a lot nicer cucumber out of the garden than what you could buy at the grocery store. And it was right there, and you could do all that. So, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, it's begun, and there are people recognizing it. I know, you know, you have a group of companies like ButcherBox and a few other ones, and I think even like Sam's Club and these other people are starting to sell wholes and halves of beef and pork, and they're making it more available because people are going to that model, and they're ditching, you know, buying a pack of steaks here and a pack of ground beef here or a roast here. You know, they want that. And the big chains they're slow, but they're starting to respond to it, but it's already happened. I mean, the place where we took our cows to get butchered, you've got to get on the list because he told us last year when we picked up our meat, he said, I did so well in 2020, I was able to expand, and I'm glad I did because now I can serve more people. And so, you know, you're really seeing it, and you know, I think this is a good thing. Hopefully, people will start seeing the other things that are happening and wake up and resist, you know, on the other end too, because they're gonna try to come after us. I mean, look at, you know, these people's gardens and stuff. You know, the government approved garden you must go to. You cannot go, you know, in your backyard, or you can't go to the farmer's market, or they're going to shut down a farmer's market, maybe, unless they come up with these, you know, the same thing for farmer's markets. Who knows? I mean, shouldn't say it too loud. I don't want to give them any ideas, but something to definitely watch out for.
All right. We're going to have to wrap this up Mitter Monday. I'm continuing to read the story here from LifeSite News and all the stuff that went on at this big homesteading conference in Front Royal. And it's talking about this woman who founded the Amy K. Fuel, who founded the Homesteaders of America in 2016, with a booming success since her first conference in 2017, has a lot to say on why people should consider homesteading. In an article written for the 2022 conference booklet, she reminded her readers of the Great Depression, and she is convinced it will happen again. No, there's a misunderstanding about the Great Depression. You know, David Simpson's mother likes to tell the story that she lived on a farm outside of Bogalusa, Louisiana, and they didn't even know that there was a depression. If you live on a farm, you're probably not even going to other than people maybe showing up with poorly trained people maybe showing up with weapons to try and take your food from you.
Well, that's true, and I mean, you can even that's part of the reason I'm as warped as I am, as I grew up with too many people who never got out of the Depression. But everybody remember that series in the 70s called The Waltons, and they would always say they always had enough food and all. There were certainly struggles they presented, and some realities of what was going on during that time. But you never once saw them. They had electricity turned off one time, but they never actually had were starving. So, I mean, I think that's a very good representation of what was going on. But another thing, I'll just throw it out there real quick. We may want to bring it up next week because I have not followed it that it's gotten this far. Is, in California, of course, being the one, is it's before the Supreme Court now about all the new animal regulations they put in there for pen sizes and exercise and what you're allowed to do and not do, and trying to not only say that the California farmers, if you don't meet this, you're not going to be able to sell your products in California from other suppliers in other states. If you haven't met our criteria, we won't let you bring it into our state.
Right.
So we're going to wait. That's going to be very interesting where that comes down. So they're attacking us from a number of positions here. So watch out.
All right. Mitter Brian Koch, thank you for being here on our Free Farm Friday today, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to be back. Well, we're all glad to be back. We will talk to you again real soon. You know, one of the things that Michael Thomas brought up at the St. Benedict Center conference was, one of the things that he gave a list of was that we needed to have a directory. And I'm going like, dude, we have a directory. I can tell you, I can get you a directory tomorrow morning. I can get you a directory by 3 o'clock this afternoon. I don't have to have a reason. And so he actually went to the site while we were there, and he goes, this is ingenious. This is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. I'm like, yes, and I can't get people. I can't pay them. I can't motivate hardly anyone. There are thousands of people going to these conferences, and hardly anyone will actually submit something to the directory. And it's very frustrating. So those of you that are out there, that if you're in that number of resistors, you need to stop resisting. And you need to take this seriously. And you need to apprise yourself that there is something more to all this than you. There is a charitable thing that needs to be done. And the charitable thing that needs to be done is reach out, talk, write letters, find people that you trust and that you trust for your life, really, and that you want to help and you want to support, and do that. And do that like your life actually depends on it, because it might.
Yes, and I don't think, until you start seeing these real disruptions hit, it's going to be too late for a lot of people. And I'm afraid to see, even in these smaller towns, what's going to happen, because there's still not enough people connected to where they should be connected. So.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for all that. Another Free Farm Friday into the record books, brother. God bless you. We'll talk to you next week.
God bless y'all, and we'll talk next week, and hopefully, I don't lose any more animals. So,
well, how many have you lost?
50 meat chickens, 12 turkeys, 13 egg layers, but we did kill one dog for sure, and shot another one, and it ran off. So, and now we have a livestock guardian dog. So,
how'd you lose the guardian dog?
No, we didn't lose that. We have one now.
Oh, you have a guardian dog there. Yeah, guardian dogs are good.
Yeah, she was it was amazing. Our neighbors found her for us. There was a family that couldn't keep her because the wife had a stroke and the dog was a very, you know, very affectionate dog. And he was afraid his wife would fall down because she's not very stable and stuff. So
she's not very stable and stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a blessing for us, but yes, God bless y'all and everybody listening and Mitter Monday. And, we'll, look forward to next time.
All right, brother. Talk soon. All right, Mitter Monday, we're gonna wrap up here. You're heading back to the Jersey to the Jersey farm.
Yes, sir. I gotta kill chickens this weekend. I feel his pain, and I think I've lost 4 turkeys because of the rain, which is certainly not 12. But
because you had too much rain.
Well, it was too much, and they start crying. They're not the smartest things in the world. But the reality is, you got livestock, you got dead stock. That's
You got livestock, you got dead stock.
I feel his pain.
All right, folks, go to the website at crusadechannel.com/gift. Give those gift memberships away.